You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The 16th century Italian artist Parmigianino is best known for his painting Madonna of the Long Neck, but among his other works is a life-size portrait of a woman so beautiful and mysterious that she warrants her own one-painting show. Parmigianino's Antea, a beautiful artifice, is on view at the Frick Collection through April 27th. It's the first time in more than 20 years that this painting has been shown in America, and I'm very pleased that it brings Colin B. Bailey, Peter J. Sharp, chief curator at the Frick Collection, back to the show today. So it's a pleasure to see you.
Very nice to be back.
Now, the identity of the woman in the painting is unknown, but she's called Antea. Where does the name come from?
Well, you know, that there's two things. The first time we learn that she is called Antea is in about 1677 in a guidebook to Rome, where the author listing works in a guidebook to Parma, I'm sorry, and the author listing works in this palace notes that this is Parmigianino's Antea and that she was his beloved. So that, of course, set the story for the centuries to come. There is, truly, in historical life, an Antea who was a famous courtesan in Rome and who's listed as living in Rome in the 1620s. So she's a real person, but the connection with this picture is very, very tentative.
And nobody seems to really know who she is. And as you point out, the first time we even get a name is over 100-something years after the painting is done. She's dressed very richly. And during that period, didn't viewers kind of know all sorts of things about what the painting was about that we have lost? You know, she's wearing fur, she has a glove, she has a ring on this finger, not that finger.
You should be taking an art history seminar. You should be teaching an art history seminar. That's exactly.
I took a few.
Well, that's exactly the challenge for us today as scholars and curators, to see what we can recover in the imagery, the details, the attributes of this picture. And it is full of them. And the book that Christina Nielsen wrote, that is a tour de force of detective work, to try and say, what is that marten fur on her shoulder? What is that coverlet that is in very elegant material? Even those sleeves and the apron, the folded apron, in the 18th century, people looked at the apron and said she must be Parmigianino's servant, maidservant. Not true. These are very luxurious, costly items that might be part of a bride's trousseau.
And she has a lot of clothing on. It almost overwhelms her body. I wasn't sure whether he was doing that on purpose, making the head a little small, or whether he just wants us to know that she's wearing layer upon layer upon layer.
Well, you do get a sense of the amount of clothing that she has and the weight of it. But you also, and this is one of the marvelous features, you look closely and you see her breast is just peeking through. And so there's a real sensuality and an unexpected sensuality, even though she is so covered up. And this dualism is one of the sort of gives an erotic charge to the picture. She's also bejeweled, and these jewels are very fancy.
And she's looking directly at us. It's kind of a frank look. I don't know whether this was common.
She's looking directly at us. But when you scan the painting in front of it, you'll see that she's actually just turning. Her dress billows in the lower right. And when we look at her face, although it seems straight on, it's not entirely in equilibrium. One ear is seen full, one ear is seen in profile.
So there are all these different theories. She's a bride, she's a courtesan, she's a mistress, she's Parmigianino's daughter, she's an invented ideal. She does look young. She looks about 16 or so.
She does look young. We can cross off Parmigianino's daughter, didn't have a daughter. So that we know she's not. We can probably cross off Antea the courtesan, because although Parmigianino lived in Rome in the 1620s, when he painted this in Parma, Antea the courtesan was not in front of him. It's recorded firstly, in fact, in a private inventory as a full-length coloured portrait. It's called un ritratto colorito in piede, full-length. And the fact that a young woman is shown full-length is very unusual in Renaissance portraiture. Doesn't advance us too much more, I'm afraid.
Well, he did a lot of portraits, didn't he, for a man who lived such a brief life?
He did, and he painted very grand, noble sitters. his Madonnas, his angels, his mythologies, often their female figures have the same face. So the issue of a sort of ideal beauty, which is well argued in this book, an ideal beauty, an image of grace that is not necessarily a personification of a single person, is a strong argument. And yet, when we look at this picture, when I look at this picture, I can't imagine that he didn't have a young woman standing in front of him.
My guest is Colin Bailey, Peter J. Sharp, chief curator at the Frick Collection. We're talking about Antea, a rare exhibit because it's a one-painting exhibit. Usually when a masterpiece like this comes our way, a museum will then go out and find every other Parmigianino or paintings by other people from the same time. You've resisted that.
Well, we did a beautiful Parmigianino exhibition at the Frick in 2004, and we have, in fact, borrowed a single work by him before. But here, following from the Fornarina, Raphael's Fornarina that came to us a few years ago, here is a rare chance for a single work to really capture the imagination and to allow us to look long and slowly.
Was he famous during his lifetime?
He was remarkably famous for someone who lived such a brief period of time.
He died at 37.
It's a sad story. I mean, he is born, he's a prodigy. He works very young with his family's workshop. He moves off to Rome at the hope of getting papal commissions from Clement VII. Unfortunately, 3 years later, Rome is sacked by the invading Habsburg armies, and so he's running off. He goes to Bologna and finally ends back in Parma, where he's given one of the most prestigious commissions the city can offer him, and he doesn't come through.
This painting was lent to you by a museum from Naples. So I guess the work has moved around as well.
It is part Naples. The Capodimonte Museum in Naples is one of the treasure houses of Italy and has many of the Farnese treasures, and this is one of them.
Now, he was thrown in jail for not completing that commission, wasn't he?
He was thrown in jail, and it's quite possible that at the time, the man who ended up owning this picture first, Francesco Baiardi, was required to give money to secure his release, and when Parmigiano is released and dies a couple of years later, the studio contents enter into Baiardi's possession in a way as a repayment. So that may in fact be why this picture ended up in the Baiardi family to start with.
Now, his painting Madonna of the Long Neck is usually cited as a prime example of high mannerism. It has exaggerated poses and unbalanced composition. Is this also a mannerist painting?
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely, although we also don't altogether cleave to those categories anymore.
Well, mannerism was in reaction to the High Renaissance, wasn't
it? Exactly, except that, frankly, Titian is painting at the same moment. Veronese is painting at the same moment. We are in 1530s. Raphael's only been dead a few years. So we're still in the Renaissance, and we're still in the High Renaissance. But I know what you mean.
We were taught in school that artists threw up their hands. They said, Michelangelo has done it all. We have to come up with something different. They started doing all sorts of exaggerated things.
Well, Michelangelo was still doing things while this picture was painted, so it doesn't quite work that easily. But you're absolutely right. Parmigiano's grace and his exaggeration, his pleasure in the sinuous line, his almost fetishistic detailing of skin tone, of reflections, of folds of costume, these are things that classical artists of the High Renaissance would have slightly frowned upon. And as we were saying before, this type of language is even more followed by Pontormo and Bronzino in Florence in the decades to come.
And then we see it elsewhere. Holbein would have done the same sort of thing in the Netherlands, yeah, and in England.
Yeah, but I think in the case of Antea, as a portrait, whether of an ideal beauty or of a real person, there's less room for him to engage in some of these exaggerations.
Another difference from earlier portraits, 15th century portraits like the Mona Lisa or Portrait of a Man with a Medal by Botticelli, they usually had landscapes in the background. And this just has a dark background.
A dark background in which light is mysteriously emanating. And this is a very good point, but it adds to the mystery. Where is she? Where is she coming in from? Why is she turning? Why does this light pick up behind her, just under her marten fur, glancing across her breast, and then her face fully in light and quizzically challenging us? Those are real questions.
Was this something that was new to art?
You know, in some ways, this direct frontality comes from classical sculpture. And as we know, in the 16th century, artists in every city were looking back, recovering, reviving the antique.
Even in the 15th century, you had Mantegna, who Even was doing that, century. And also doing paintings which had blank backgrounds.
But I think what's special to Parmigiano and what is unusual here is this self-possession and enigmatic quality together. And in a way, we are still drawn to it, but we're still trying to see if we can solve it.
Did he do frescoes as well?
Indeed. In fact, in Parma, that was his bread and butter, and he was a great frescoist. After Correggio, he was the greatest frescoist.
Is most of his work of this quality, or is this an exceptional painting?
No, his work is of this quality, absolutely. If you go to Dresden, if you go to the National Gallery in London, and if you go to Parma, when you go to Parma, see the churches, the cathedral, Fontanellato, this pleasure villa just a half an hour outside, and of course the pictures in the museum itself.
So why, maybe you can't answer this question, but why has the Madonna of the Long Neck been the only painting that most people even associate with this painter?
Well, in some ways we often associate one painting with one artist. When we associate Mona Lisa with Leonardo, of course you can think of many other pictures. And the Madonna of the Long Necks is an extraordinary, innovative and exciting and beautiful picture. But you will see many of those qualities in many other works.
And most of them are in Parma?
Many of them are in Italy, in Rome, Bologna, Parma. And the smaller examples, fantastic pictures in Vienna, London and the Louvre. And now, for the next couple of months, in the Frick as well.
And I'm so pleased that it is here, this extraordinary painting, an opportunity to see it. Obviously, the museum in Naples decided to do you a special favor.
It is a special favor. We have been very much helped by the Foundation for Italian Art and Culture, which is set in New York, and has helped us open doors. And really, it is the signature piece for the Capodimonte, a great loan to us.
Colin B. Bailey is Peter J. Sharp, Chief Curator at the Frick Collection, and this painting, this extraordinarily beautiful painting, can be seen at the Frick in a special one-painting exhibit through April 27th. Thank you so much. By the way, there's a lot of other great art at the Frick. It's it's one of New York's hidden treasures. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you.